Hi, listener. Thank you so much for checking out Watery Death Show, an anime podcast so bad that it loops back around to being good. Or so we hope. Just wanted to take a minute and say that if you enjoy what you hear, you can rate and review us on iTunes, subscribe to our YouTube or SoundCloud, or follow us on Twitter at Watery Death Show. We also have an inbox at WateryDeshow@gmail.com if your message can't be fit into 280 characters. And we read all the messages you send and reply to them, whether they make it to air or not, because we really do love our community, which we hope you'll become a part of if you haven't already. But whether you do or not, you have our sincere thanks for listening, friend. Hope you enjoyed the show. Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs. Welcome to Worry Desh Show's Stream of Thought, Saranzumai, Episode 7. I am not drunk. That's, like, seriously, what? Like, I know, it's a surprise.
Shocker.
I wasn't drunk the last time I led. I was just incredibly anxious and also a bit dim in not properly scripting myself at a time, as is my, you know, want and need. But apart from, you know, my defining feature being my rampant alcoholism, I am actually Shaden. And joining me as always, from across the pond, I'm going to pass the ball over to him. Insert first of many ball jokes of this particular stream. The Soul Doctor.
Balls. Balls.
Balls. Big balls. Balls.
Yep. Rescue my balls. Into the gungeon.
Indeed. Yeah, do, by the way, check out our very first poll of the day, which is, what should Enter's nickname be? I've got one for him. It's Colossal Shithead, but, well, that's not on the poll answers, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah. We will get there, but it's very understandable how anybody could come to that conclusion right now.
But tapping head, I've got a thought on that, but we'll save that for later. As it turns out, folks, this has actually been quite a prodigious, like, you know, turn of events that we're streaming today and not yesterday, because we weren't doing yesterday because it's Memorial Day in the US. So Doc was, of course, on holiday, you know, enjoying some family time away from the collective insanity that is this podcast. So good for him. But there's a very good reason why I say that it's, you know, a prodigious event that we're doing it today, because it's the 28th of May. And according to the official Zaranzumai Twitter, it might not be official, I don't know for certain, today is Enter's birthday.
Oh, my, my, my. Really?
I shit you not.
How old is the little scamp turning? Is he 16? 15? I think, if I had to guess, it would be 16, but...
Well, based on this episode, I think he's aging in reverse, given how much of an immature prick he looks like. A very happy birthday to you, Enter, you little shit. That's just how it works. Like, fucking hell. Okay, so we're going to do polls very quickly, which I believe that we only had one last time, because I had a brain fart of many brain farts last time when we tried to do Twitter on this one. But it will pop up later, the theme of it, which I believe was the question of, was Kepi trying to trick, you know, Kazuki into giving away his Shikadama? I don't have the results to hand, but I'm going to pass it over to... I'm passing the ball over again.
Yep. Our poll was indeed, did Kepi try to trick Kazuki into giving up his Shikadama in the 2/3 point of episode 6? And 77% say yes, Kero. They do not trust the duplicitous Kappa.
I mean, you know... I'm building a case file here. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it is totally a ring-bound, like, you know, work. Full of evidence here. It's got pictures and photographs and everything of Kepi doing his thing, like, you know, basically being a scheming little bastard. Mm-hmm. Of which we get more evidence of it in this particular episode, which leads me to make one of my, you know, crazy theories I'm often quite fond of doing when it comes to this show. So we'll get to that soon enough. But yeah, thank you everyone who took part in that poll. We will have more going along throughout this particular stream, including one that's already up there about Enter's preferred nickname, although you are free, of course, to submit your own in the replies.
Yes, please do.
So, okay, episode 7, Saranzumai, I want to connect, but I want to betray, which I think was the title of Brutus's autobiography before he stabbed Caesar in the back. Prick.
Can you just imagine... like, those dance numbers apply to Shakespearean kind of language and the setting. Just like a man in a toga doing the, like, you know, poses. It's that's fabulous. I love
it. Let me tell you something about a little show called Fermi Rome. I am probably
right. Yes, another Noe Tamina jam. Right.
So, okay, where do we begin with this episode? Well, we begin with Mabu's one and only appearance on the X-rated version of British Bake Off, as it turns out. because he is in the subway making otter-shaped puff pastry of some description. I'm not 100% sure what it is. He's being manhandled by an actual otter-like demon here, who says that some fine tuning is in order, because we've already seen at this point that Mabu does indeed have a mechanical heart, which will be elaborated on later. So my guess from reading into this is that this is before they were reassigned to the human world, something we see happen later, and this is part of Mabu's, like, you know, fine-tuning to make sure he's still the person he was previously, or at least that's what we think, because the otters are duplicitous bastards, so... Anyway. So, OP, and we don't start, as it turns out, you know, with the family of Haruka and Kazuki, as we have done often before, and indeed where you'd think we'd pick up after, you know, the previous episode's events. But rather, we start with our favourite, you know, bad boys, what you gonna do? Reo Mabu enjoying a nice little breakfast here with Azusa Sarah doing her skit, you know, on the TV. Mabu is eating a meal that I don't personally recognise, because I think my diet up to this point has basically consisted of KFC and maybe a Burger King if I'm feeling frisky. So, you know, point in the comments, you know, was to what exactly it was that they're eating. It's some Japanese meal that I'm just not familiar with personally.
Oh, what did they say it was? Is it broccoli on soba?
Yakisoba, like, I think it was, with broccoli, yeah.
Not a broccoli fan.
I've discovered a nice wok place in Manchester recently, so I'm starting to get back into eating noodle-based dishes, because I just...
Well, noodles I'm a fan of. It's just... Noodles are great. The broccoli, I could...
Yeah.
Oh, man. Broccoli.
It's not for me.
Not for me. There are many vegetables I enjoy. Broccoli, not one of them.
Well, I'm one of those people who thinks that Brussels sprouts at Christmas are a war crime, and, you know, apparently that's a British tradition, so...
Oh, no. Horrible tradition.
Yeah, it is. Skip that, please. Anyway, back on track. So, Mabu is, of course, eating that. He's looking rather uncomfortable while doing so, and Reo, you know, is commenting on this. Apparently this was some meal that I think Mabu might have wanted to eat a lot previously before the incident that happened, you know, in the past when they took over the Kappa Kingdom, which resulted in... in Mabu's death, quote-unquote.
So Emily actually wrote about this, and she wrote two posts for the week. But Emily Rand, by the way, AJ the Fourth on Twitter, for me
Shout
in
out
full,
Emily.
Yeah, for me in full bloom is the name of her website. If you Google that as all one character string with those spaces, you will get it. Because I can't remember if it's .com or .wordpress.com, but one of the two. Anyway, she talked about the prequel manga. And how, like, Mabu in that would often, like, cook for Reo, and how that was kind of a big part of their bonding, and that Leo, like, was out of kind of habit, made, like, an extra portion of whatever they were eating for him, even though up to that point in the show... You know, he couldn't eat, or this new Mabu couldn't eat, and how that was like such a strain on their relationship, and how if you read the prequel manga, like, you'll see just how different Mabu is compared to how he was before, and there were some interesting thoughts. But anyway,
yes, Reo makes the point that everything that comes out of Mabu's mouth is a lie, and there's clearly, you know, a lot of resentment about this situation they're in. Which we will get to later once we get more information about what happened in the aftermath of the Otter Empire. But they're not the only ones having breakfast, as it turns out, because the Kazuki's family, Haruka included, they're having a nice morning breakfast. Everything seems pretty much back to normal.
So happy!
Yeah, yay. Good for them. I'm going to make a point about that later, so just put a pin in this whole thing for it. Nicely done, Doc. So, Haruka and Kazuki actually go out to their usual spot where Haruka was sitting on that wall, you know, violating all the OSHA compliance rules that there are about there. So, poor kid. But, that being said, if you hadn't seen the rest of the show until this point, you'd think they were pretty close to each other. And truth be told, they are now, because they've now fixed their, you know, little impasse that they were at previously. Mm-hmm. It's a very sweet scene, actually. You know, it gives him gives Harika a head pat, which I thought was really cute.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And on top of that, Kazuki actually gives the scent pouch, I think, back to Harika after Harika tries to give it to him, saying, "No, you hold on to it. I'm not worried about my real mother, wherever she may be. Mum and Dad, as in, you know, Harika's mum and dad, but his as well now, as far as he's labeling them is concerned, they're the people I want to forge real connections with." And you know what? Good.
Interesting word choice.
Mm-hmm. Very on the nose with the language here, yeah, using connection specifically as that.
Mm.
But it's spring break! No, summer break. I'll never get bored of making that joke, even though it's a tradition I will never partake in living in the UK, where the idea of having, say, a spring or summer break at, say, Blackpool Pleasure Beach, a place I've mentioned to you before, ugh, woofed. Yeah. If you happen to be British and have ever visited Blackpool, I'm so sorry. And I'm sorry to people who live there. I mean, I joke, but it's like, you know, it's a run downtown, it's deprived and all that, and I shouldn't really make any lie of it. But anyway, it turns out that Enter's sister is wearing a giant watermelon donut.
Have I ever told you about the college I went to for undergrad was pretty small and pretty sort of like white, conservative Christian. But there was, have I ever told you about the one and only one Albanian fellow that I met there called Habib?
Mm-hmm.
Have I ever told you about this person?
Does it ring a bell?
Okay. So you just, you mentioned spring break, and like, I think Habib like had this idea that no matter where you were in America, spring break, like the debauchery would just come to you, materialize out of the ground, like that bikini clad women would like rise up from the ground and like, the stage with DJ playing on it would, again, just materialize into being wherever you were, and people would just party. Like, he just had this idea about spring. He was just very obsessed with, like, working out for spring break. He was kind of a meathead. But, like, I always just... He would talk about spring break for months. He was very disappointed about what spring break in conservative Christian college was like. It was not,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It was not not to his liking.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Kudos to you, Habib, for keeping the dream alive. Dream though it were. Anyway, so yes indeed it is, you know, spring summer break here, you know. We cut to Kazuki and Enter, you know, at the soccer place they have by the riverside. They're practicing. Kazuki's gonna go back to the soccer club. And then they catch Toy walking across the bridge above them. Convenient, by the way, that the soccer place was on the left-hand side and not the right of the bridge, because obviously Toy doesn't look out of his eye on that side, so they never would have seen him otherwise. But they call him down to come play with them. I want to give props, by the way, to the previous episode for actually setting up something here. It turns out that Toy is actually pretty decent at soccer. Or football, if you live in the UK and you know you have the superior brand of English as opposed to the crappy American variety.
Or yeah, anywhere else in the world besides like America and Australia. I think we're the places that call it soccer. Mm-hmm. Maybe Japan? Maybe I think Japan made it too.
Yeah, that's true. Although maybe they need a Brit on the Crunchyroll translation staff. Just right. Saying, you can hire me if you want. I don't know anything about Japanese, but I do know how to put the word proletariat in there. A drop of a hat. Just throwing that out. Just saying. Anyway, they comment on how good he is at football. This was actually set up in the previous episode, because you'll recall that Toy was the very first one to actually kick the ball up to Enter, then kicked up to Kazuki as a kappa. And you could have written that off initially as like, you know, oh, he's a capper, he can do all this sorts of crazy stuff, including imitating 90s action movies with that slide to catch the lift and the door in front of it.
Yes.
But that's been established, and indeed he is quite good at it, as it turns out in this scene here. So he says, you know, join the soccer club, and it turns out he accepts. So we've got kind of a new status quo forming here, where things are getting to like a state of normality. Like, Toy, a kid who basically had, after a certain point, stopped being a kid and had to grow up way earlier than he should have done. In fact, I won't even call it growing up so much as going through an experience that no one really should have to go through. You know, him joining the soccer club and doing that feels like, you know, him doing something normal. Like, you know, that normality that I've spoken of before that isn't, say, like, you know, about being boring or average.
Right.
But just the idea, you know, of living a regular life without all this sort of, like, chaos and awfulness that's coming into it.
I was surprised he like, accepted. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, were you surprised by that? I thought he would try to get out of it and they'd have to convince him. He was into it.
I don't know. I think he's turned a corner a little bit. Although, it's like one of those days of your life things, you know, where if he seems to be going really sweet, everything's great, and you're just like, I'm waiting for it.
Where's the knife in the back? Where's the soda can in the back?
Well, we'll get to you, Garbage Pail Kid. Don't you worry. You're going to get your moment, son, unfortunately, because sunlight is the best. The sunlight is the best disinfectant, as it turns out. But meanwhile, we cut to Otacop HQ, where they're unveiling the latest in, you know, CSI technology, which is Rayo turning his pinboard into an interactive map. And I always love shit like this. I mean, so I go on like about PowerPoints in like Banana Fish and stuff like that. And he turns it into this map here. But while this map is going out, we get, of course, one of the show's flashbacks, in which this is immediately following the aftermath of the invasion of the Kappa Empire, in which Rayo wakes up. He's been on IVs. He's asked how he feels, you know, by the wonderful, you know, Monokuma's uncle, the Otter, the chief scientific Otter guy, getting in all the Otter puns as well, which is even better. He's asking how he feels. turns out Mabu is dead, in a coma. How you want to, you know, roll with this is up for debate.
Yeah.
He is, you know, Rayo says, like, you know, what do I have to do? And the god says, look, you can save him if you want. It's fine. Or you can stop his heart anytime you like. It's up to you to decide.
Grim.
Yeah. Do you want to let him go or do you want to keep him? So, yeah. Emily, shout out to you again, Emily, has said a lot of times, like, you know, that she had a very strong fear of what was going to happen or what has happened to her two, you know, lads, her two boys. And as it goes, this is like a Matryoshka doll of awfulness. Every single time we find out something new, it just makes me feel worse for them, even though they are ostensibly the villains, especially Rayo, given his, you know, kidnapping Haruka, which I think is, like, you know, forbidden under the UN convention. What a prick.
Yep, yep.
So, something to note after this flashback concludes is we, of course, go back to the map. But before that, Rayo makes specific mention of if I have the dishes. That will be important for later, so put a pin in that again. So he uses his, you know, own Otter version of Google Maps to determine through a combination of both the zombies and I believe the desires that were put out there based on logos. He traces it to an origin point in the center of Akusaza, if I mispronounce that, I apologize, which is where he believes Kepi is, because he's, of course, looking out for him. So they figure that out. And Kepi this episode. Yeah. Kepi this episode. Like,
it's great.
I've not seen a character like him since I watched Looney Tunes back in the day. Like, he would literally be a great counterpart to Bugs Bunny with some of the crappy pulls. So regrettably, however, it is garbage day at the you know, the football place.
Yeah.
Someone has painted the town red and completely wrecked it with boxes, cans, you name it. All the kids, by the way, are wearing new clothes. Something to know, they're all more casual now. They're like a bit more relaxed. But they decide, you know what? Let's have a montage because we're going to go and clean it up.
It was so good too. So wholesome. Yeah.
I just had to say, like, I wish there were two more characters because then they could literally be the Planeteers with these, you know, clean up that they're doing.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God.
Shouts to Dr. K, by the way, or Dr. Kappa. What's the worst that could happen? Again, you know, I love Japanese fiction where they utilize Dr. Pepper in shows like, you know, everything's going great. Nothing could possibly go, oh, shit, then it all just completely went to pot. See, I'm seeing you there, Steins Gate. I know what you're at. But yeah, they do manage to clean up the football spot. You know, all is well for moments. Mabu is talking with the evil, omniscient otter voice, saying something about the system being at 39%. What that is, we don't know yet, but we'll certainly find out soon.
Very distrustful, by the way. Like, the big otter supercomputer and or shadow monster guy is very much like the first thing they say, I feel like lately, it's been like, you're lying. It just doesn't believe them a lot. So, like,
and saying that to Mabu, who is a mechanical creature at this point, basically, is even more damning.
Yeah, why would that thing lie? Why would that guy lie?
I don't even know. So Kazuki's walking through town. He notes he's no longer carrying the box. He's no longer concerned with Azusa Sarah or doing this whole thing. He's basically back to being a regular kid, which is good. And then Azusa Sarah unveils the lucky selfie of the day, which balls. Deep balls, big round balls. Now, I have the mentality of a child when it comes to this sort of humor. So obviously, I'm just here having a good chuckle to myself and I'm thinking, oh, Sarah Zamai, you bring out, you know, the idiot in me. But then, of course, what happens later just completely blew my brains out. I was like, Jesus Christ, Ikuhara. Like, I thought I was going too far by making a balls joke, but hey, here we go.
Butts and balls.
We'll get to that in a moment. So they get back. Like, I think they're cleaning the place again. Toy, however, gets a phone call from his brother. We don't hear this conversation in full. We may get it potentially in a later episode. But it turns out everything's gone to rat shit. His brother has been betrayed by his gang members, shock horror. I mean, who could possibly see that coming? And now they're wanted men. Both of them. So they have to leave town. And that's going to be the end of that. However, Kazuki has a plan. Kazuki says, this is a hope. We've got four of them at the moment. We need one more, and we can source it for you. And Toy is all very, you know, like, taken aback by this gesture. Mm-hmm. But they agree that's what they're going to do. They're going to get one more. They're going to go see Kepi, get the next silver dish, and then, you know, set things right for him. This is followed up by a conversation between Enter and Toy outside what is the Japanese equivalent of a 7-Eleven as they're grabbing water for Kepi. In which Enter basically says, look, I want to fulfill Kazuki's wishes. That's fine. That's good. I want to do that. And his wish right now is to sort you out, you know, to help you out. So I'm going to do it. And they have like some nice little teasing together. In the end, it's like, you know, Deji lies. Everyone's great. Everyone's happy with each other. Everyone's got a plan. At this point, if I recall correctly, this is when we just get the massive car crash into the scene of something that I did not expect to see, or was going to, you know, have some build up to this. Fucking Azusa Sarah is carrying Kepi round town. I was just like, what? Where did this come from? What? Like, I applaud the audacity, or dare I say, the balls of this show.
Hey!
Just to have that happen out of nowhere, like, I thought that was going to be a tentpole moment for this show where the two met and Kepi were like, oh my, what's a fair minute?
Yeah, like, they didn't know about each other, but clearly.
No, they are a couple. Apparently, Azusa Sarah is very impressed with Kepi performing, you know, minor acts of vandalism by putting stickers on things. Clearly I've got the wrong, you know, dating or, you know, hooking up technique, if that's the case. But yes, indeed, they are a couple, apparently. So while they're talking about that, then we start hearing the otter dance song coming in, you know, which means that there is a new otter zombie coming in. And this otter zombie, oh.
Which we don't learn about beforehand this week.
No, there is no, you know... We've totally found a murder, right. A guy's been murdered who's some, like, strange person. Like, there's none of that.
Here's
just
a picture of him with a piece of paper over his face. That stuff.
Pretty much, yeah. Last seen as a mascot at a local stadium, I suspect.
Probably.
probably, yeah. Let's be honest here. So this otter zombie is a giant football head with a ball gag. And two, like, heels on its side in the same position as my headphones, basically. And I just thought, I want to, like, here's the thing, right? If I ever meet Ikuhara, I just want to ask him, in a polite and genuinely interested way, like, what does he see? Where does he learn about this stuff? Like, is this a Pulp Fiction reference? Like, I made the Ezekiel 25:17 one earlier in this series run, and now we've got the looks like a couple of flies moment. So, I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, what else could the show do as far as its zombies are concerned? I mean, we've had the foot fetish, we've had the bath war, we've had the ball gag. Answers on the postcard, folks, as I'm sure it's shit out of ideas.
Well, there are myriad fetishes in the world, Shadon. This is what we'll learn.
That I know of more than I would like to talk about, to be quite honest, thanks to some, stuff I've watched on video reviews where it's like, oh yeah, let's talk about this for 5 minutes. I'm like, oh, Faye, thanks, but I'd really need to know. Anyway. So, yes, this otter zombie appears, and our heroes go to see Kepi. By coincidence, you know, he ain't there. Kepi then turns up four-legged headcrab style like he's from Half-Life. Just walking across the floor. Like, you know, going, ah, we're a couple, lovely couple. And I honestly, the first thing that popped into my head was the famous line from John Carpenter's The Thing, which is, you gotta be fucking kidding. Because that's what he was like. He was just... I don't even know what to make of it. But he's Kepi at this point. The man is his own rule book, you know. He doesn't give a shit. But he immediately senses that something's off about his location, that something, you know, where he stays, and that something's been done. And it turns out the dishes of hope, which were being stored underneath the pavement there, are all gone.
No dishu. They voted. Nope. He voted no dishu. He's the one.
Yep. They're gone. They're just gone. And obviously, you know, that then begs the question of who might have stolen them, but we'll get to that later because we have speculation time about that. For the moment, though, as it's because the otter zombie is the kappa zombie has now appeared, the ball zombie, everyone's soccer balls start disappearing, leaving only Enter's blue balls there, I'm afraid. That they're all the remains. Sorry.
Boo. I enjoyed that one. That was a good one.
Yeah. They're the only ones that didn't float away, unfortunately. But yes, they, because of a comment that Enter makes, calling Kepi a frog by accident, Kepi turns him into a kappa first. And it's been established at this point that the person who gets turned into a kappa first...
Spider Kepi!
Yep.
Lucy's right!
Spider Kepi! Spider Kepi!
It is very haunting, I have to say. It was unsettling, to be sure. God.
Hmm. So... Kepi turns Enter first into a kappa, and as we've established, the person who gets turned into it first, leads the way with the song and dance, and ultimately, importantly, again, put in this, is the one who will end up leaking a secret out once they actually defeat the otter zombie. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Japanese for soccer ball was established during the mid, interstitial bit before the, I presume, it's commercials if it was on TV, is kama. Is that right?
Say again.
The Japanese word for ball or soccer ball is kama.
I heard tama, but it could be kama.
Okay,
I'm like hearing, so... but I've heard. It wouldn't be the first time I'd be mistaken about those two consonants in a Japanese word. Like, you know, whenever the otters sing their song, and I think it's Kama Soya or something like that. I always hear Tom Soya.
It's just product placement for Soya. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I agree.
There you go. So the reason I bring this up is because the Kappa zombie attacks them and says, like, Kama Kama Kama. I was like, is that a motherfucking JoJo's reference? It really was. So they, of course, defeat the Kappa zombie. And Enter is the one who now has the leak happen where he has to let a secret out. Things are slightly different, though. Because the music is different this time around. But what's the big secret this time? You know, we figured that they can't possibly leak anything more out here. But no. Turns out Enter's a garbage boy. And when I say he's a garbage boy, it's because he's the one who's been wrecking the soccer area. For some reason, he's also wearing, like, this weird mask. And he's creeping around with his evil, shit-eating grin. That will be important for a minute. In a minute, by the way. So put that in the back of your heads. But not only that. Not only that. It's also him who stole the dishes of hope, apparently.
It be. Mm-hmm. Why did you do it? I mean, mm-hmm. I know why, but why? Right? Man, fuck. This fucking shocked me. I did not see it coming, this reveal.
I was blown away by mm-hmm. it. But I have a fallback. So that's when it cuts to credits. But as Saren Samayas wants to do, we do have a post-credits scene. And this is where Rayo meets Mabu for the first time after the heart transplant. And it's clear, you know, that he's very dissatisfied with all this, that he's not the same person. He's just a facsimile, basically. And that's when they're going to be sent, you know, to the human world to go and get things away. I think that covers everything from the final scene.
I think that's right.
Important. Yeah, I'm just double checking because I don't want to miss anything. The chief officer, by the way, he's, you know, saying, you got, yeah, I love
word.
The puns, but it works.
Yeah.
But yeah, the darkness is there as well in the Kappa Kingdom inside what looks like a giant beer can.
Do you mean the 80s cover band? The darkness?
I was thinking more the darkness from The Fifth Element. That's what it looks like to me.
I haven't seen The Fifth Element. I know.
All right, okay.
Hey, at least I watched the two newest, like, numbered Star Wars movies this, like, last week. So, really, I've seen... I'm up on contemporary culture and science fictions. I know the important ones of our time. I knew I wasn't going to drink tonight,
but, well, I... You know, sometimes situations change as it happens. Mm. So, yeah, that's episode 7. I want to connect, but I want to betray. Happy birthday, Enter Youth Prick. Or is he? Is now the time for us to do talking points, because I'm going to get into my crazy theory.
Enter the gun. Well, mate.
Thanks, Tracer.
So, what did you think, like, of... You know, we alluded to this already, but when Kazuki said, like, Haru, you can keep the bag because I'm going to focus on forging real connections... I thought that was really interesting. Like, the adjective there is interesting, real. You know, I guess as opposed to what? Like, the connection he had through the Messenger app?
I would say so, yeah. To just be himself.
I guess you guys, like, the fake part of that is... Well, I hate to say fake because, like you say... Simulated experiences can still lead to like real emotional growth and stuff. The reality versus unreality is not talking versus text message. It's more like I'm just being myself. I'm not lying.
Being me.
Yeah. So it's not like I was wondering if it was going to end up being this kind of, and the show in general would kind of end up being like a critique of really immediate technological connections, like anonymous connections. But it hasn't gone there so much. Like, yeah, I think I agree with you that this is more about I'm gonna be vulnerable and be myself and let go of resentment and try to like forge bonds with people. And he like touched Haruka for the first time that I remember in the present like timeline, not in flashbacks. It was like so good. I loved that.
It was really sweet, I will admit. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the thing like about this moment that Kazuki seems to genuinely want to do this. There's an authentic feel to it. It feels heartfelt. And I think this just like continues the idea that I've thought of with Saren Samayas, which is that it's about going beyond superficial levels of connection, which is, you know, through materialistic things or just basic gestures like Yuzu's Sarah selfies and such. Because after all, one thing we've now established throughout this show's run is that all of Azusa Sara's selfies lead to the Kappa zombies coming into existence in the first place. But they are distinctly desire-based as opposed to the love that was, you know, on the box for Arika. And they are clearly, of course, seen as insufficient. Now, Emily, Go-Go Atomic Robot, points out in chat that this is not necessarily an indictment or, you know, a damnation of the people who have been the victims of this. They have their, you know, incredibly weird and quirky fetishes, to be sure, and some of them have indeed gone a bit beyond the realms of actual law, like the guy stealing bathwater. That is, yeah. But the guy in the latest one, whoever he may be, we'll call him Soccer Jim for the sake of it. Soccer Jim, like, he just has the specific sexual fetish of, like, you know, wanting to be kicked by his girlfriend, and indeed that's the image we get. Now, here's the thing, right? I am of the opinion that you can do what the hell you like with your partner as long as you agree, you know, you're equitable with it, keep it safe, keep it, you know, look after each other. That's fine. Go absolutely nuts. You do what the fuck you want as long as, you know, you look out for each other when doing so and you have an equitable understanding of it.
Banana bread. That's a safe word between you and I. Just want everyone else to know. Just being transparent here.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly for that, Doc. So, yeah, like, this guy, like, you know, he wasn't doing anything wrong by doing that. So I don't think Saren Zamai is necessarily dunking on these people entirely. But I think it's trying to put the argument forward that there is a little bit of value, you know, to these kind of, very surface-level things. But they are insufficient or, at best, complementary to a genuine, informed relationship. That's the idea I get. Yeah. So is now the time for my crazy theory.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to come out and say it. I don't think Enter did it.
You're going to have to walk me through this one.
Okay. So first point, as I said, point of opinion before, who was on the lookout for where Kepi is and asking about the Dishes of Hope at the midpoint of the episode and used his own version of Google Maps to find it?
I can't remember. Who was that, actually?
That would be Rayo.
Okay. Which is who I thought and who Kepi threw out there as a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Next question for you. I want you, Doc, to just pick a very innocuous memory from your life. Anything at all, right? When you have when you remember something, how do you remember it? You always remember it from the first person because you can only go by your eyes and ears. All of the leaks we've had thus far, though, have been from a third-person perspective, the kind of omniscient camera.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't necessarily be Enter's memories or anyone else's memories for that matter. So how are they getting these, you know, visions, shall we say? What's the conduit? That would be Kepi. And Kepi, as we've established, is, you know, a bit of a duplicitous little shit at the best of times. So, there's that. I'm thinking that because Enter dropped that, you know, frog comment on him, he's getting a little bit of, you know, revenge and telling them or presenting to them a falsehood. Bear in mind why Enter looks like a cartoon character in this scene. That struck me as very strange that he looks like that. Because we saw the actual genuine one of him, you know, blowing Kazuki's wind whistle, you know, in the previous one of the previous episodes, and he wasn't
to warp.
Yeah, he wasn't like, you know, doing that crazy face about. It was very matter of fact. It was very embarrassing. So, and there's the practical thing of how the hell does he carry all that garbage all over there? Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. It's either Rayo's stolen them or Kepi's just flat out vanished them because he's getting tired of their shit.
I just want to hang out with my girl.
Hell, that's a fall. Why is Kepi never brought before, like, the fact that Kazuki cosplays as Azusa Sara? You'd think he might have a bit of a bone to
pick. It's very interesting. But I mean, I guess maybe they just got together.
Mm.
They are just showing it just now, but I mean, that's neither here nor there. I mean, that could mean nothing or mean everything. Who knows?
So, It is a crazy theory, and it could very well be that Enter actually did do it, because as you've established, there is a genuine reason that weakening the fur, which is that it turns out that Toy and Kazuki are getting along quite well with each other, perhaps a bit too well, as far as Enter's concerned. He's a covetous guy. So that's understandable. Like, the motive is there. I'm fascinated by the fact that this show, like, you know, it distinguishes between the leaks and the flashbacks. Because both of them technically serve the same function of seeing an event in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But the flashbacks are not through the lens of the Saren Zamai and the Shurikadama. They are just a narrative tool, separate, functioning as part of the actual work rather than being a diegetic thing in there.
Right.
So I'm thinking to myself that there's maybe, you know, not necessarily an entirely 100% credible, you know, we can't wholly believe in the leaks necessarily, and that they could be influenced by an outside force. Potentially. Could be, again, crazy theory. It could be Enter did it. And if Enter did do it, that, from a narrative standpoint, is still fine, because it makes perfect sense to do it, and that will make for good drama.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want.
But there's my crazy theory, though.
I want to slurp up the drama. Give it to me. Delicious relationship drama.
Are you going to turn into a Kappa zombie and yours is going to be bowls of soup?
Probably. From the the tears of anime boys. how did Enter react? Like, I remember him saying... Because I'm wanting to see if anything that he said would indicate that he was innocent. You know what I mean? Him protesting and not saying, no, don't show this because it's true.
He did say that, to be fair.
But what did he say? I mean, I remember him saying no.
It was about that. So there is that, which does put a little bit of hole in it. I suppose my counter-argument to that would be that, again, the same thing is that maybe that's not Enter saying it, or he's being forced to say it, because of the whole Sirens of My process that Kepi is ultimately in control of.
Well, if it's just no, that could support both readings, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I was wondering if he says something that you could specifically... Yeah, I didn't remember the rest of his lines, you know, so I'll have to go back and look at that. That's an interesting theory. We'll see... So a lot of times you come up with these theories and we have to wait till the end. We'll see next week whether or not this is right, so I'm excited.
Stay tuned, loyal listeners and viewers. I've always found this shows, like, you know, way it uses perspective and all that. Like, again, we've got distinctions between flashbacks and the leaks. Flashbacks are kind of a willing giving away of past info from characters, even if, you know, they're not explicitly giving it to us. Are in a lot. So, we'll see.
So, Trickster in chat is asking you, what will be the narrative purpose of Enta not having done it? He feels like that this is the natural wrapping up of Enta's arc, where he finally stands up to Kazuki and says, like, here's my wants and needs, stop ignoring me.
He could still very do that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this could force that out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, you know, the catalyst that makes that happen. But I think there's certainly enough evidence, of a reasonable amount of evidence, to suggest this is the case. After all, take Enter's words throughout the thing. Like, is he definitely lying? We don't see any of his fantasies this time around.
We don't get
the inner window here. But he does seem to genuinely want to help Kazuki, and by doing so, Toy does that. And there's no, like, you know, body language to me that suggests, like, you know, that he's against that, whereas the show has been very good at, you know, getting its subtleties out there, you know, to foreshadow and give us, you know, insight into the characters' behaviors. So, narratively speaking, to answer your question, Trickster, you could still have that happen. You know,
we'll see. Well, what would be
because?
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Because here's the thing, right? Even if Enter didn't do it, for the time being. They will believe that he did. And in terms of, like, you know, working from a narrative with that, that serves basically the same function as if he actually did do it. It's immaterial, like, whether he did it or not, insofar as getting the drama out there. Because they will still believe it to be true. And that will force, you know, conflicts as a result.
Hmm.
So it can still work. But there is certainly evidence, as we've seen from both Kepi's duplicity and the fact that Reo is now, you know, homing in on them, that they could very, he could very well have stolen the dishes. Because he certainly has his own motivation for getting the dishes back, which is probably to, you know, bring Mabu back to his original self.
Okay, yeah. Maybe, for my part, I hope Inta did do it, read the soccer field, just because it's such a bold... Like I said, I want the drama, but it's, I feel like it's such a bold story choice, and I want to see the character conflict that would result in it.
I agree.
Regarding the dishes, like, I'm less... Like, I'll be totally fine if Inta's like, I did trash the soccer spot, but I didn't take the dishes. You know what I mean?
Ah, hello. That's a fault.
That part.
There's a fault.
Yeah, maybe Reo did that, or maybe Kepi did that. You know, who can say?
But. Indeed. So, yeah, there's my crazy theory of the week, folks. You know, still paying the farm on the fact the show disappears after you watch the final episode. Because it just gets erased from history.
Right. question. Did you feel... I guess this isn't really much of a question, because I think I felt more disappointed at the Inta reveal than just about anything. It was so shocking. But I guess the second place in the emotional cart race... I can't think of, like, what are words? The second most overriding thing that I came away with feeling was, like, I just felt so bad for Toy. Like, you know, like you said, he made, like, a choice for himself that was very much, like, I'm going to put me first, and
yeah.
I'm going to do something fun and quote-unquote normal, something without all the chaos. And then he just gets pulled right back in to the fucking, you know, life of crime. It hurt me.
You know what the funny thing is now that you mentioned that? If Enter did do it, he didn't need to. Because Toy's leaving anyway, completely independently of his actions. Nice one, Enter. You fucked up in a way that also completely made your actions pointless. Like, I would hate you if you did do it. But at least understand if you got something out of it by driving a wedge between the two of them. You didn't even need to fucking do it.
No, you didn't.
10 out of 10.
And, like, I think Roby popped your balloon, by the way.
That's fair.
Man. And, like, the look on Toy's face when Kazuki talked about giving him the dishes, like, melted my heart. Like, just the drawing and, like, this kind of changes in his face and the softening of it. God, it was so fucking beautiful, man. Like, he... People were doing selfless things for him, like, for once, and being kind to him. And it was so fucking good. And then it had to get, like, erased. It made me so mad. Like, if not for the, like, Inta shock at the end, like... The lead story for me here would be, like, pissed for Toy. So pissed for Toy. Like, fucking the criminals, man. They're ruining lives.
Goddamn seagulls, honestly.
Okay.
I mean, I have to say, like, you know, the seagull gang, like, guys.
Oh, that's right. The seagull
gang. Could you not pick something better than seagulls? Common vermin? Really? Come on. Get some fucking tigers on your back, some shit. This ain't difficult. Oh no, the seagulls are attacking. What will we do?
Poll 3. Is the seagulls the worst Yakuza gang name ever?
The only gang that's worse than that is the Orphans from the Warriors, because they're the most pathetic bunch of nitwits you ever see.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yikes, poor guys.
The Orphans. Just pity what is? Do they have... So the Warriors... I also haven't seen
red
the Warriors.
Jacket.
So, like, they're all themed gangs? Is that the idea? Yeah. That's the idea, right?
The Warriors, the Rogues, the Baseball Furies... You also had The Lizzies as well. So yeah. Yeah, so they were, but the Orphans were just the most pathetic bunch of the lot by far.
I mean, that's all real right. Bad.
Okay. So next talking point then. Let's talk.
Oh wait, no, it is your turn. I'm sorry. I fucked up. You go ahead.
So, let's talk about the... Again, this is kind of a criticism I've got going on with Saren Zamai as we go along, and I'm hoping that it does get resolved. Kazuki talks like, you know, a big game about how he's going to, you know, have a proper connection with Haruka and Haruka's mother and father. And with Haruka, I believe him. And when I say I don't believe him when it comes to his parents, quote-unquote, that's not me saying I don't believe he means it, but I don't believe the show is going to give time to it, which I feel is kind of a weakness in it. Because here's the thing, right? I said in the previous episode that we covered that I wanted to see like the follow-up discussion between Haruka and Kazuki about what he was doing by, you know, dressing up and pretending to be Azusa Sara. That ostensibly, or that's, I don't think has happened.
No.
If it has happened, it's happened off screen because things are back to normal. I mean, if you took these scenes out of context, I'd think that they would nothing had ever happened. Now, I'm going to open this up to the floor here to our audience. I want to ask you all a question. Are you happy with the show as presented in that it doesn't go into detail, you know, on this conversation between at least Kazuki and Haruka explaining what's happened? Or would you prefer it didn't? It did rather, you know, that there was that scene where we got to have them talk it out in whatever way that they are equipped to do so, given how young they are. Now, I'm going to offer you an interesting point here because I was recently reading a Curious Cat response by Nick Creamer, aka Bobda, and this was about character development. And Nick's point was that, you know, we focus perhaps a bit too much as critics on the idea of a very structured and very understandable and passable, you know, character growth. Like, here's the point where they start, here's the point where they end, do as the, like, the stepping stones in between. I mean, you've heard me, for example, make the mild complaint about the Persona series' use of social links as, like, you know, your 10-step plan to character growth.
Right.
But Nick's point was that it's not as simple as that. People don't necessarily grow in a linear arc. They, you know, sometimes will dodge difficult situations or just let things lie or not talk about them in great depth when it might potentially be better that they did. Because that's something we naturally like. We, you know, a lot of people are conflict averse. I certainly am. So thinking about, like, in that way, having read Nick's post, it kind of made me realize maybe it's actually not such a bad thing that that scene doesn't happen. Because, you know, if I were in, say, Kazuki's shoes, or even Haruka's, at their respective ages, would I be equipped to have such a conversation? Would I want to have such a conversation? That's the question. But then again, you could also make the argument that, you know, if Kazuki really does want to make a deep and meaningful connection with people, he needs to talk the talk by having that talk. So I'm open to, you know, people talk about it because I want to, you know, I mean, I still think the issue with the parents is kind of a problematic one because they've been barely a presence in the show thus far. I think Nyantaro has probably had more time on the screen than they have. Probably. I'm not joking.
You're right.
So I think that, you know, making time to mention, like, you know, about them, I can understand why it's there because obviously, you know, like if you just said, I just want to forge a connection with you, Haruka, like then Haruka would probably go, wait, what about Mundani? He goes, who? I don't know. Yeah. But this also makes me think that you might potentially be able to drop Kazuki's actual lover completely out of the show with little consequence. And I'm just thinking to myself, maybe that could be more fleshed out. I don't know. What's your feeling on that, Doc? Do you think that, you know, that should be more fleshed out? And do you think that, or do you disagree with me that, you know, maybe they should have had that talk on? What's your feeling?
Well, I think that the runtime of the show is the first obstacle to this because, you know, there's so many characters that need, excuse me, that need, like, further development, kind of need to we need to find out some key things about them. Their arcs need to be completed, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it will be like the wisest use of time to focus on that part. Like maybe if the show was longer or if there were fewer characters. But putting aside all those sort of practical constraints, I don't think it is a problem that it hasn't happened yet. I think it is very believable that, you know, Kazuki has been gone, essentially, like, just gone away. And, like, he's been on this island for so long that, like, just to have him back in their life for a while and to make that normal again and to show him that they still love and accept him and that they kind of forgive him for just, you know, piecing out is the fact that you'd want to establish that kind of loving foundation first before asking questions from the parents' point of view. But you're talking about from Kazuki's point of view, right? When should he make the first step in apologizing to the parents and everything? I mean, maybe he's just waiting for the right time. That seems like a very kind of, how do I say this? Yeah, I mean, it just seems like he might be waiting for the right time to do it. So I don't think it's a problem that he hasn't done it immediately.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing that happens when we do Stream of Thought, because we're obviously covering a show that is in progress and there is still time for these things to be covered. I just ask, because from the perspective of a writer, like, if he wants to, you know, have these deep and meaningful connections with Haruka's parents and his own parents, so to speak, they can't really leave that hanging. They need to be more involved in the plot than they have otherwise been. They've been very peripheral.
Yeah.
Because again, I just ask them, like, why bring it up at all? I only bring this up as a point because I just do want to see it brought to bear, but I also do want to, you know, consider, hey, you know, maybe it has happened and it's not relevant because that's, you know, how things go. I mean, I wouldn't even begin to fathom if I were a father how I would have a conversation about, you know, like if I was, you know, if I had a son who had done what Kazuki had done, how on earth would I go about talking about that? I ain't got the first clue. I mean, you're a father yourself, Doc. How would you handle it? I was about to put a tenner down then that you would say, I've got the first clue. Because, and I'm not, and that's not me doubting your ability as a father. That's me saying that this is a situation which is
how
so
do you prepare
unusual.
For that? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not 100%.
And as we've established before, I have my own parenting style. and I live in America, which, you know, there's a lot of differences in the way fathers relate to children across the different cultures. Mm. So.
Well, it's all right. I know what I'm going to do with my kids when I have them, and that's to send them out to the circus or freak shows that they'll turn out to be. It'll be good for them.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
No, that was really interesting, though. I mean, does this conversation need to happen on screen? I don't know about with the parents, but I feel like he'll have another moment with Haruka that will, if not outright be what you're looking for, will like allude to it.
Hmm.
That'd be my feeling.
Yeah, if I had to guess, maybe the impetus for that happening might be that Susa Sara disappears. And I don't mean literally disappears, but like, you know, vanishes from the public eye. Because
mm-hmm.
that could well happen.
Yeah.
But we will find out as time progresses. But I will say, just in response to what Emily Gogo Sonic Robot has just posted in chat here, if there is one thing I can definitely give credit to Zaran Samai for, like, we're only 7 episodes in now, and this has been a very dense work.
Very dense.
But it's not. I don't mean that as a criticism. I think that it's great. It's been so many different elements into it. You know,
yeah.
We've got, let's just count off the top of our head here. We've got, let's start with Kazuki. We've got him dealing with, you know, parental abandonment, identity issues with both in terms of, like, where do I belong, if, you know, with my family, him dealing with suicide, as I discussed previously. Like, there's so much with him alone.
Yeah.
And we've got Enter, you know, nascent sexuality, jealousy and envy. We've got Toy, who has been forced to grow up in a way that no child should ever have to. He's a fucking murderer, but not, you know, because of, you know, him being malicious or evil, for lack of a better term. And then we've got Reo and Mabu, who've been just, you know, quietly doing their own thing in the background, sort of, but now coming more and more to the fore as the victims in their own way of this little thing.
This is
fucking nuts!
Yeah, that last point especially, I think, is important to take away from this episode. And you could glean it from the last couple, but it's especially, like, kind of underscored here in episode 7 that, like, so often the kind of arm of the oppressive system, like the people that are carrying out the will of the system, are themselves deeply oppressed. You know what I mean? It's like you'll oftentimes see, like, members of marginalized groups being part of oppression to the marginalized group which they belong. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, just to pick a random example out of the air, YouTuber Blair White, say, is a trans person who I think many trans people are on record saying she has said a ton of transphobic shit. And she's, like, the person that the wackos hold up and be like, look, see, we're not the only ones to say all this, you know, ridiculous, unscientific shit about trans people and their right to be who they want to be. But this is just an example, right? Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And Reo and Mabu are like that. You know, they are...
Yeah.
Well, they're carrying out this oppression. Like, they're, like, fucking pushing people into these, like, desires and getting them zombified, but, like, they themselves... Murdered.
They are murdering people.
Yeah, they are. And, like, but Mabu is, like, basically... I mean, I wonder how different Mabu is from a Kappa zombie. Because he's clearly been reanimated in some way. That's my assumption. He's so... so different. It's almost like he's been recreated. Like, he's this completely different person, even though he's the same person.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. This, now, perfectly, as it turns out, leads into my final talking point, which is to let's actually talk about Reo and Mabu. So, I firstly want to just follow up with what you were saying there about oppressors actually, you know, being oppressed themselves. And just bear in mind how this episode has played out relative to what we've seen previously, in that Reo, you know, he's the one who creeps up on Haruka and, like, literally kidnaps a 10-year-old child. He is unmistakably a villain. There is no way of, like, you know, slicing that or cutting it in any other way, as far as I'm concerned. He's a villain. But then we get the scene at the start, which is just him having breakfast with Mabu, and it's humanizing him, for lack of a better term. Humanizing this, is he even human? Is he, like, an otter, like, given human form? We'll figure that out later, I presume. But, like, we, you know, now get to see
him. I think they are humans. Well, now...
Not with those teeth, he ain't.
Well, they were also present for the destruction of the Kappa world, so let me hold back on that. We'll reserve judgment.
I was going to say, if Reo ate an otter, he's definitely a chain chomp given human form with that set of teeth he's got. So, you get the, you know, get these scenes that humanize them, and it's... It really takes you back here, like, you know, that we have this unrepentant villain who is, you know, seemingly the, you know, at least the, you know, recognizable face of the enemy in this show. I mean, we've got the whole, you know, darkness, hello darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk to you again, that's hanging out in, you know, the Kappa beer can, the Otter beer can. But, you know, these two are the villains. And then we get this. Now, let me ask you a question here, and I think this ties things with what I've said before about the idea of, you know, connecting with people who, through like, you know, light, sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied here, through like objects and like, you know, simple gestures. Now, the otter who, you know, is fine-tuning Mabu at the start calls him a doll.
Yes.
Calls him a doll.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing I want to ask you. Like, I don't know. I don't like what the pie chart is for how much of old Mabu is still here relative to, you know, the new one who is run by this mechanical heart.
Yeah.
But what I'm seeing here is I think that in their own way, Rei and Mabu are an extension of that idea that, you know, connections need to be beyond the aesthetic, beyond the, you know, the surface level. Because new Mabu, or Mabu as we want to call him,
Mabu V2.
he's a facsimile. He has a mechanical heart. And the reason I bring that up is the heart, it can just simply refer, when people say that, it can just refer to the organ, you know, pumps blood around the body. Fair enough. Refer to it. Yeah. It's not.
It's fucking now. We're the worst.
Doc, we've not yet paid the license fees to start covering Yes. Come on. But then again, Owner of a Lonely Heart. It all ties back together. Mm-hmm. So, it can refer to the organ, or it can refer to a kind of a simonin, or, you know, a filler in for the soul, or the personality, or the emotions. So Mabu's lost all of that, and that's clear by his personality. He doesn't really ever, like, you know, raise his voice or get angry or anything like that, whereas Rei has done that many times. And so I think to myself, like, you know, is his connection with Mabu like something he needs to ultimately leave behind because it's poisoning him now? Because this Mabu is not the same Mabu as before. I'd argue he's dead. It's like lingering on to, you know, the love or affection for someone who has passed. And I'm not saying you don't do that, of course. You do, of course, grieve for them.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's what's happening. He's still grieving for him. He's got, like, a doll of him or what would otherwise be a picture or a memory of him that is no longer there. And so maybe Siren's Mai, again, like, you know, its own way, again, looks like Mabu. Sort of sounds like Mabu. Sort of acts like Mabu, but he ain't. There's a distinction here between, you know, something that is meant to fulfill the role of a regular living and reciprocal being.
Interesting. Our buddy Emily Rand had kind of a different read, which I'll put to you and see what you think.
Mm-hmm.
The way that, so I think her post is called, I can't remember the exact title, but it's about reconstructing the past. And her kind of claim that she's making was, it my view of it, that Rei and Enta are pretty similar in that they are fixated on reconstructing their pasts.
Yes. Enta, very valid point.
Enta, you know, wants the golden duo. Rei wants Mabu and he to be together like before the Kappa Kingdom collapse, when Mabu was, you know, much more energetic and was cooking and all of this. And they were raising the baby in the manga, baby Sarah. And that her read on new Mabu was that, like, new Mabu is valid. And Rei just needs to, like, wake up and acknowledge that the person in front of her is Mabu. Mabu has just changed a lot. And to kind of stop, it would be healthier if he stopped pining for what can no longer be. Same for Enta.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely see where it's coming from. I don't think our two viewpoints necessarily incompatible, because that idea of, you know, letting go of the past, like, that could still apply. Maybe he ultimately does keep Mabu around, like Mabu 2.0, or discards him ultimately as, like, you know, a ghost, even. Could be seen that way, potentially, as well.
It'll be interesting to see.
But we'll find out. But yeah, I think that there is very clearly, like, a line here where, even, you know, if whether you subscribe to Emily's theory or my own, I'd probably go with Emily's theory, because she's infinitely smarter than I am on this subject. Yeah. But my point is, whatever way you look at it, I think that Saransmai is definitely asserting that there is no substitute for a genuine human soul or heart, as it were, that the mechanical one that, you know, Mabu has is clearly insufficient. It doesn't make up for, you know, the loss of the old Mabu, the one that Reo was clearly very fond of. And indeed, Reo's dissatisfaction with Mabu, as presented now, has been present throughout much of the show.
Yeah.
And that's the key, that's the only difference that we see in terms of, like, you know, what's happened to him. It's not like he's lost an arm or an eye or anything like that. It's not like, you know, he's been in the coma or anything. It's the heart that has been changed.
Yeah, this is a good point. The kind of mechanical imagery of Mabu's heart, the way that visual speaks to me, the way I read it, it is that there's a statement being made that whatever Mabu is now, something is lacking. You know, not that it's different than what I put forward earlier, like what I attributed to Emily's post that, you know, Mabu V1 and Mabu V2 are valid. They've just changed. What the mechanical heart says to me is that whatever is keeping him going now, like you said, the show is indicating to us with that imagery that it is more facsimile than really substantially what Mabu was.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a lot of weight in that heart and the way that they depict it. Yeah.
Bum, 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 bum. One final question for you, actually, just as a thought. So Mabu was very clearly badly injured, you know, at the end of that flashback where they, you know, captured Kepi, presumably, or, you know, took over the kingdom when the darkness or whatever tried to off him.
I believe in a thing called love.
That is actually probably the most appropriate song for the show that there could be.
Ah! Just listen to the rhythm of my heart.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Someone go make the AMV. You get on that. I'll pay you in Kit Kats. Specifically one Kit Kat. But it'll be a good one. It'll be the salted caramel flavor.
I was going to say, what flavor?
So,
what are your top three Kit Kat flavors? Give us the BuzzFeed listicle. Go.
Oh, I'm just going to say, like, well, I'm going to start with the green tea one from Japan, because that's actually legitimately great.
I've never had this. Okay.
Regular's pretty good, and then salted caramel. But I'm just, there you go.
I think there are only three flavors that I could buy here. Regular, dark chocolate, and white chocolate. And I've only ever had regular. So.
Well, America is a cursed land. Let's just put it that
way. We are.
But the point I was going to ask was this, right?
Okay.
What if I told you again, crazy theory time here, that that Mabu did not need to have his heart replaced with a mechanical one, and the artist just did that to, like, you know, basically
to control them.
Yeah, to control him, because he was too, you know, not flamboyant, I suppose, but, like, you know, he exercised too much of his own free will and had too much of a personality. Emily is correct. Peanut butter is also pretty good.
Peanut butter anything candy. The peanut butter M&M is just a tiny ecstasy in a candy shell. It is glorious.
And it won't get you arrested like ecstasy.
Exactly.
So there you go.
Exactly.
I can't. I'm unfortunately not eating Kit Kats tomorrow, because I'm currently on a bit of a diet. So
yeah, sorry. We should. Let's not talk. We won't talk about Kit Kats anymore. Sorry about that. I don't want to push you into sin.
I'm gonna become a Kit Kat Kappa zombie.
Exactly.
Kit Kappa.
I just want to fuck the Kit Kat bar. That's all I wanted. Kit Kat, Kit Kat. Da 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 da. It'll be a good one. It'll be a really good one. And when they try to, like, spray the zombie, he can just, like, break apart part of his Kit Kat face and be like, "It doesn't hurt me. I've broken off a piece. I can break into fours and attack you." There's a not Nutella M&M now. Wow. I love Nutella. I love Nutella. You know, here's a thing that I gave my son the other day, and he was really into it. I put Nutella on a waffle, and he really liked that.
Okay. I'm calm. I'm collected. I've said pretty much everything I want to say about the episode, actually. Like, it wasn't quite the heavy hitter it was last time. But that's to be expected. You can't exactly follow up that with the same thing again. But we do certainly have more cards being laid out on the table. Our deck's been reshuffled. We're starting a deal again. Another fine episode from Siren's Mind. Do you want to rate it first, Doc, or shall I?
Oh, I have one more thing to add to our discussion. It's not a question, but I was trying to think, as I am wont to do, about, like, messages of the show, holistically up to this point, like, what can we take away? And I was thinking, this episode prompted me to write down that up to this point, we have seen a lot of people get, like, stuck. Like, existentially, they are put on hold from growing, from moving their life in a positive direction, right? Kazuki has, Haru's accident. He's stuck in that mire of guilt and self-loathing. Inta, stuck in the past, wanting the golden duo to be together again, longing for that. Same with Reo, pre-Mabu's death. Mm-hmm. And you could say for the other characters, like, that they're getting stuck or have gotten stuck. Kazu seems to be kind of the first person to help, to become unstuck and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking that, like, the show kind of depicts society, depicts this overarching system kind of running and controlling kind of our day-to-day thoughts, what the objects of those thoughts are, what our desires are.
Mm-hmm.
It equips us to... It equips these characters to want, to feel desire, but it doesn't really equip us to help with loss. Like, whenever we experience a lack, whenever we get stuck, like, if someone dies, if someone abandons us, if someone changes to the point where what we had together can't be the same, relationship loss, grief. The society in Sarah's and Mai, the world, it only knows how to make you want things.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when, like, you're not, like, wanting, like, what you should be being trained for, equipped for, supported in, is, like, moving on, is healing, coping. But this world in Sirens of Might only knows how to make you want. So, like, it twists your loss and makes, like, some sort of distorted object out of it. Something for you to desire, which won't fulfill you ultimately. And maybe that's one of the big criticisms, that, like, this world doesn't know how to help you when the solution to your problem isn't a desire, isn't some sort of object, can't be satisfied with a want. Like, it needs to help you figure out how to live without, also, in addition to directing your wants. And that's what I, like, yeah, this is what I came away with thinking.
No, that's fascinating. It's true, because if you think about it, bear in mind the OP, we've got, arguably the four main characters, which is, of course, we have Kazuki, we have Ensa, we have Toi, but we also have Reo. And each of them has the objects of their desire framed in the OP. So what if, you know, ultimately the lesson of Sirens of Mai is that, you know, their desire needs to be moved on from in some way or another? Because, like, in Kazuki's case now, he genuinely loves Haruka and wants to, you know, do right by him. Wants to, you know, care for him in a proper brotherly way. So he's good. His hump has been passed. But Ensa, clearly, like, you know, even before the events of today's episode, he needed, you know, to leave the idea of Kazuki behind that he had. You know, that they could ever, you know, he could ever be that close to him. I mean, that's his fantasies, after all, that we get to see here. For Toi, it's very obvious that his brother is a poisonous influence on his life, even despite the fact, you know, that he feels beholden to him because he did save his life. But, well, like I say, Disney princesses and all that, you're not beholden to that shit just because they do that for you. You know, you don't owe blood debt to someone because they save your life. You owe them gratitude, certainly. But that does not mean gratitude and unwavering loyalty are very different things. And it's clear from what happens in this episode that, you know, Toi was about to start having a relatively normal 13-year-old life. And nope, life of crime comes and ruins everything a fucking game. And as, of course, for as for Reo and Mabu, as I've already said, maybe the idea is that ultimately Mabu, he's a ghost now. Not literally, of course. He ain't getting, you know, flushed away by a proton pack or anything like that. But, you know, he's haunting Reo, and maybe Reo needs to move on. Because bear in mind what I said. You can stop his art any time. That's what the officer says.
Yeah.
So that is an option.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it, Karen.
Oh, I feel so much, like, I feel a lot of pain for Reo. Like, I can't imagine, you know, being presented with, like, that devil's bargain fresh in grief. You know, you just find out what you've lost, and then you have, you know, the evil corporation come in and say, well, you can have it back. It might not be exactly, it might not be exactly what you, you know, like, remember. It might, but you, at that point, you're human. You would take it, as opposed to, like, throwing yourself into the fucking maw of grief.
Monkey's paw curls up just a little.
Yeah, but, and then you have to do that awful shit for it. Like, hell, I mean, he's probably pretty wrecked inside.
Yeah, hell, if you think about it that way, bear in mind what we saw with the golden dish of hope that was used by Ensa in the first episode, because he's a dimwit. He asked for a year-long supply of cucumber rolls, and he got a giant cucumber
roll. Ah, like, that decision more and more. Like, fuck.
He really is a garbage boy, isn't he?
God damn it! It's the worst.
I'll stop dunking on Ensa just to point out that, okay, rampant idiocy on his part aside, again, monkey's paw. Careful what you wish for here. Mm-hmm. Reo did get Mabu back, but, well, he got Mabu back.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah. It's the fucking, like, Full Metal Alchemist, you know. You try to resurrect your mom, but it's not your mom, kid. That's.
No.
That ain't her. Yeah.
Yeah. So, who knows? We'll see what happens, of course, with Reo and Mabu going forward. I fear a horrible end for, like, and I don't say a horrible end as in they're going to die or anything. I fear just a grief-stricken end for the two.
Completely. Completely. Mm. It's faded, unfortunately. Lucy, like, excuse me. Lucy and Chad brought up this detail that, like, I don't know, I hadn't put two and two together, but, like, you know, as you pointed out in your summary, they say you can stop his heart at any time. Mm. And he's holding the heart after every transformation sequence.
Kalima!
So, like, is he thinking... Give me your phone. Is he thinking, like, every time I could stop this now? Should I stop this now? Like, is that... Because holy fucking shit, man. Fuck.
Hope he doesn't drop it.
Son, give me your phone.
Oh, crap, I broke it.
This is not like a Jeeves and Wooster sketch. That would not happen. Surely that won't happen. Pray to the heavens.
Let's hope not. Let's hope not. Right. Well, that concludes episode 7. I want to connect, but I want to betray. Et tu enter, you shit. Happy birthday. I hope your cake is made of flesh eating insects.
God, so mean. He's just a kid. He's just a kid. God damn it. My favorite wrestling call.
Presuming he did it, in which case he won't. I'll get him a cupcake instead of the one that's filled with insects. Anyway, let's rate the episode. Over to you, Doc. Let me pass the ball to you one last time.
Pass me the ball. You're welcome, Sophie. This is a tough one because I got a lot of feelings from this, but like as an individual episode, I'm not sure it tops the last one. So
Nah, definitely doesn't.
I'm going to say this episode, I'm going to give it 4.5 pointy shark teeth out of 5.
Fair enough, mate. Fair enough. For me, I'm going to rate this episode lower than the last. Of course, I am. But the thing is, episodes like this happen because of, the narrative art that's required. We've had a big, heavy hitter last time. Of course, we're going to have a little bit of a lighter episode where there's a bit more downtime to, as I say, reshuffle and replay the deck. But it still was funny. It still handled its tone well. We got more pertinent information here.
Some iconic moments. The montage and the Sarah and Kepi, glamour shots.
Yeah. newest hottest ship setting sail
there. That's right. On the cover of whatever magazine is important for the cap world.
Indeed. So,
The Capitalist.
That was an expensive joke. It cost me a lot. Here,
take my phone.
Fuck. Anyway, so I am ultimately going to rate this episode 4 out of 5. Kepi is a head crab.
Oh, Jesus. I'd forgotten about it. No, seriously.
He was a fucking head crab. still great episode of a great show, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit iffy on, the whole parent thing, as I say, but that's a thing that we're going to have to see play out across the entire of the show's run. Hopefully they will do something with it rather than leaving it dangling as it currently is. But, well, tune in next time, folks, to find out.
Indeed.
So, to everyone who's joined us this fine evening, thank you all very much for coming along. It's always good to have people joining in chat and getting their thoughts in and educating us, I mean, that's part of why we do this, because I do want to, get some opinions from people on what the show is about. That I may otherwise miss or not understood, so certainly keep them all coming. If you've enjoyed this lovely little stream/podcast of ours, don't forget to drop us a rating on iTunes or SoundCloud or subscribe to us on YouTube, wherever medium or channel you find this from. If you can just give us the old thumbs up there, it would be hugely appreciated, as it does help our discoverability. Our next stream, I need to confirm this with Doc firstly, which I can probably do right now, is I believe going to be this Friday.
Let me give a look at the old guy. For some reason, when you were talking about this earlier, I either didn't look at my calendar or I did look at it and just forgot. Well, I think we're a go, my friend. I think we can do it.
We'll be back at the usual streaming time of 1800 BST. We did it a little later stage due to Rage with Starkad. However, that's not the big news I want to give you about this stream that's coming this Friday.
Oh?
So we've mentioned her a lot of times on this stream, and we've had her before.
Hushed tones. The whispers.
We've had her before on Warrior Death Show, for Franks. Poor her. Mm-hmm. Came back twice for that. How she came back after any of that, I don't even know. And she, of course, rejoined us for The Promised Neverland. But now we're going to bring it back to talk about a show that she is intimately familiar with and is very passionate about. I am, of course, speaking about Agent 4 of Emily Rand, for me and Full Bloom. She will be joining us this coming Friday to talk to us about Saren Zamai episode 8. And I cannot wait to hear her thoughts in person. It's always a delight having her on the cast.
Yeah, like, I mean, one of my big go-to resources for, like, after I watch the episode, like, I go and kind of read her reflection about it. And it always, like, informs my, I'm always, like, whether or not I kind of agree with every viewpoint, she always raises these things. I'm like, oh, like, I should, like, respond to this, or I should have an opinion on this, because, like, I haven't thought about things in this way. So I love the way that she thinks about anime and in general, and especially this show, because she's a big Ikuni fan.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we will be back this week, Friday. We're going to have Emily join us. We're going to talk about Saren Zamai Episode 8. In the meantime, everyone, have a cracking evening, a cracking rest of the week. Hopefully, you know, the weather's not too bad and you're getting out a little bit now again into summertime. And as always, as we're often very fond of saying on this lovely little show of ours, embrace joy, everyone, to the ends of the universe, and a very good night.
That was the love gun. You've been shot by the love gun.
Mwah. Right through the heart, and you're to blame. You give love a bad name, though. Cut it! Cut it!
Good night!
Cut it!